I've got here somewhere in my criticisms of your campaign, a criticism of this particular book. And I'd never seen it before, and it looks like a coloring book.
Yeah.
And it's basically, it looks like a cartoon story.
It tells you what the plan is.
Uh-huh. What was your response to this?
Pretty much like a public response. I liked it. I liked it. You meant mine. If you meant the public response,
Well, I figured you liked it, or you wouldn't have done it. But,
yeah.
There's an envelope in here for People for a Better Oregon. Yeah. This is the campaign committee for supporting the tax measure.
But you know, remember I told you how difficult it is to get people's attention. And maybe this was a way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people like comic books and read them. So, anyway.
How many of those were distributed, or?
I don't know.
Thousands
somebody
and thousands.
Ran across. Well, I think Elaine Miles Standish did it, and I think he came across some copies and gave them to me. I don't know, Red Farm or something like that. But that's it. The interesting thing was that after this was all done, Travis Cross came across and sent to me because it was ridiculed. I'll mention it. How will you get there?
Oh, okay. The Legislative Revenue Office said a study by them of your plan would cause a substantial shift of the tax burden onto individuals and away from businesses. Was that really so that there was $169 million less for business, and it would mean $184 million more for individuals, and this could be alleviated by allowing for some of the sales tax to go to income tax relief, which you were opposing at the time? Didn't that come out again too in another tax? In this last election, remember
that
they had
was,
that.
There was split, what they call a split roll.
Split roll tax.
That was property taxes.
Right.
There really wasn't any design. Incidentally, let's talk about that for just a moment. We talk about taxing the business. That really is a fairy tale, because you don't really tax business. You tax us.
Because they pass it on.
That's right. Or they go out of business. You know, it's not a charitable outfit. They've got to make a profit. And part of the expense of doing business is the tax. And so this is a fairy tale to think we're going to tax those folks. But that always converts to the product or service that we buy.
Mm-hmm.
It can't help it. So when you're going to tax those folks, we're just taxing ourselves indirectly, rather than directly. At Churchill, this was funny, I just read the other day, one of these, I've got this book I've got to put aside, of Wit, Wisdom, and Whimsy, things that I picked up, gathered, collected over a period of time. Just ran across one I just dropped in that little book, and it was Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill says, free enterprise is viewed by some as being an animal that should be shot, by others as a cow that should be milked, and very few see it as a horse that's pulling a wagon. See, wished I thought of that one. But that's a fact. I mean, you've got such a distorted view.
Mm-hmm.
It's business that creates jobs. To say we're going to tax those rascals, we're going to pay it. And somehow people just kind of disconnect from. But my intent was not to benefit business. That was not the intent. That was not the direction. It wasn't a matter of, let's see how we can maneuver around and benefit business. Although it wouldn't have been bad. By that I mean reducing the load, which conversely would mean, hopefully, that we wouldn't pay anymore when we get the product or service. But that was not part of my thinking. That was not an objective of what we're trying to do.
Maybe you could explain a little bit how you went about trying to get consensus on this plan. Who did you go to,
We went to OEA, we went to senior groups, we went to labor, obviously Associated Oregon Industry, trying to get these diverse groups and have them become aware. Clearly, we had to deal with the Oregon legislature. The leadership in the legislature were very much involved in what we were doing, the steps we were taking. They had to pass it so that it became, go to a vote.
Were you ever able to convince Larry Campbell to support you?
No, but I respect people. I can recall when McCall plan came down the pike and I was opposing it.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand was Jason Bowe supporting Tom McCall. We didn't end up with enemies. Well, Tom didn't like me, but Jason and I were always friends. I respect him for it. That was a position he believed in, and okay, I understand it.
Right.
So it wasn't a matter that I'm not one of those don't get mad, get even kind of people. I respect people for their opinions.
Mm-hmm.
I can't convince them. For whatever reason. They may have ulterior or reasonable reasons. And I mentioned about, I think, Bert Cook way back. He and I were very far apart philosophically. But I always respected him because he really believed in what he believed. He wasn't doing it for political reasons or anything. That's what he believed in. That was his philosophy.
Where was he coming from?
Oh, very, very liberal. Mm-hmm. Very. But that was part of his growing up. That's part of him. Just like it was part, my views are part of me.
Mm-hmm.
So, if the person believes it, I'll respect it. We won't agree, but I'll respect it. It's those that are doing things because they stick their finger in the air. Those I have real trouble with.
Mm-hmm.
I'll believe it if there's more people believing it. They don't really have a philosophy of their own. And those are the ones I promised with. So, you asked about Larry Campbell. It wasn't a matter of hammering on him. We were friends. We remained friends. I respect him.
What about adding a constitutional spending limit for state government and helping to alleviate the fears of leakage to other state programs?
I wouldn't mind that. We had it constitutional. All the time I was governor, we had two limitations. One was on government spending, and the other was on the growth of the people, employees in state government.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned that earlier, that never was bothersome to me, because we never did get to the limit, near the top. And so I have no problem in trying to control the growth of state government, just like I was trying to control the growth of local government or schools.
Mm-hmm. And what about exemptions to the sales tax after the legislative session, after the vote on the issue?
Well, if something could be documented correctly, I can't be specific with you, but you recall when they were going to tax, and did pass the bill, taxing luxuries, remember, yachts?
Right.
We're going to get those rascals. And what they did was kill off the boat industry.
Mm-hmm.
Well, who are you hurting? The person's going to go buy his yacht in France, or Spain, or South America, or Taiwan.
Right.
That person can afford to do that. And so all you did was hurt the people you don't want to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So when you ask about an exemption later on, if it made good sense and it was something that was a good adjustment, there would be no, there's no reason why we shouldn't do it.
In your address to the legislature when it opened in 1985, you said history will record we were no match for the paramount objective of permanently reducing the burden of local property taxes. I guess I found that interesting that it came in 1985, and that was before the sales tax plan and the vote and.
Now, wait a minute, did I say we would be? Or we could be?
Well, that we were.
Well, I think that's a little out of context.
Uh-huh. It could
by
be.
I'm saying if we don't do something, then that line would fall.
We would not be a match, right.
I'll have to go back to that speech, but I think that's probably the way it came out.
Uh-huh. And what changes did you make prior to the final version for the ballot in September?
I really can't remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
But before it finally passed the legislature, there were no changes afterward.
There were no changes afterwards.
No.
Well, when the vote came up in 1985, the measure failed by 4-1. Did you really expect it was going to be that large a ratio? Well, were you surprised, I should say?
I wasn't surprised it failed. Uh-huh. I was surprised it failed by that margin. I think we got 31 or 32%, I thought. But anyway, it was large. I knew it was an uphill battle. Been in those battles before. I probably would have been surprised, but certainly pleasantly surprised if we won. But I certainly hope we would do better than that.
One of the criticisms was that the legislators erred in scheduling the election for mid-September, only 2 weeks after Labor Day.
Yeah, you can find anybody making speculation on anything. I don't know. You know, what's a good day? Mm-hmm. You certainly don't want it just before property taxes. And then you get around into April or May and you got income taxes. You know, what's a good time to put a tax bill on the ballot? And you've got the 4th of July and Thanksgiving and Christmas and Memorial Day. And, you know, how do you pick a good time?
People felt that that overwhelmingly low and middle class income taxpayers were rated as losers in the plan. Was that just a misperception?
Yeah. But again, you see that any tax plan is a clear victim for misconception, because nobody is going to listen to the answer.
Yeah.
The answer is more complex than the quick statement that it's going to hurt you, or it's going to hit the middle class, or it's regressive, or local. It takes a whole lot of things.
How did all these other states pass sales taxes in that case? Or did it just not come before the people in most of those cases?
I don't know. It's hard to tell. Let's go to Washington. Washington has a sales tax and no income tax.
Right.
They try to get an income tax. They can't get that.
Uh-huh.
We've got an income tax, try to get a sales tax. They can't get that. I think all I can tell is Oregon, and I finally figured out we've got two sets of people, one of which are Oregonians that really just never voted for a sales tax and would never vote for one. And then we've got probably a larger number of people that have come to Oregon over the many years who come from states that have sales tax, and they kind of like not putting out pennies in. You know, so it's a tough job.
One of the reasons for its failure was suspicion of government combined with traditional Oregonian distaste for a sales tax. Was suspicion of government really a big factor?
Sure. You know, you guys will change it. Remember I told you, try to say, no, but it's going to be in the Constitution.
Uh-huh.
Try to explain to them how sacred that would be. You'll find a way. You know, you'll find a way to get around it. It's a fact. Mm-hmm. They're suspicious. And again, if they would just sit down and listen. Well, if we take it one step further back, if they would learn about taxes in school, and I don't mean personally taxes, but the actual function of taxes, what it does, how it happens, and how it occurs. And at least they have some rudimentary understanding.
Yeah.
As it is, they don't know anything other than they have to write a check.
Have people have been educated at all, or did you go to them to break down what services were being paid for, what benefits they were getting from their taxes that they wouldn't otherwise?
No. Well, I suppose it from time to time.
Uh-huh.
But what would really get me as a legislator and as a government, but particularly as a legislator, is it's a you guys have to do something about our property taxes. And my answer is, I didn't raise your property tax. You raised your property tax. I didn't raise your property tax. And they don't understand that the high property tax was something they did. They voted for it. Now, maybe that person themselves may not have, but the majority of people in the district where they're living voted yes.
Mm-hmm.
the legislature in no way raises property taxes. Well, they would if we cut back, for example, significantly in dollars of basic school support. That vacuum has to be filled by property taxes. So to the extent that we spent money, it was at least that much less. But I say, I didn't raise it. I said, but you have to do something about it. Well, why do I have to do something about it? You raise your property taxes. They don't understand that.
Do you think there's a lack of association between what they're paying in property taxes and all these measures that come up on the ballot, many of which pass, which are add so many cents per year for such and such, for the zoo or for this or for that, and metro. And people think, oh, that's a good idea, let's support it, but then they just don't associate the total factor involved.
But if they would just read, because it's part of provisional law that you have to tell people the effect of.
Right.
And there's a voter's pamphlet, and they don't read. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is a democracy. Way back when I said, Jefferson said, they've got a kind of government,
right,
they're going to be entitled, which means, to the extent that you pay any attention, mm-hmm. If you pay good attention, you're going to have a great government. Mm-hmm. If you pay very little attention, it's going to be a good one at all.
After all this happened, after the session and the beginning of the next year in January of 86, a poll showed some dissatisfaction in terms of your own popularity. And I think you probably realized that towards the end of your term that there were some other polls and it just showed that there was a lack of popularity. I don't know whether you said it in the articles or whether you said it to me before, but I think you said you attributed part of that to the sales tax issue.
Oh, that. Who knows what else?
Uh-huh.
To say it again that I've used, friends may come and friends may go, but enemies accumulate.
That's a very cynical way of looking at life.
I was talking about Governor Roberts and her favorability. I said, man, I wasn't that low after 8 years. Because, you know, you can't please people all the time, and you're going to displease people in different quarters. Mm-hmm. Some on the sales tax, some on maybe what I would do on welfare, some on traveling to the Far East, some with how I did with the Rajneesh. You know, they're coming from different places. That's why I say friends may come, friends may go, but enemies accumulate. And so I don't remember where it was. I don't think I ever really heard it. I was aware of what you're just saying. By that I mean what we call favorability. But I know it wasn't below 20%.
In this same session, you were seeking a $1.4 billion package in new state bonding authority over the next 2 years, despite projected high interest rates and previous warnings that Oregon was using its credit too liberally. A billion of that was for the Department of Veteran Affairs for home and farm loan program. And Moody's Investor Service had twice lowered Oregon's credit rating since mid-1980, citing the state's continued dependence on the forest products industry. I don't know if this was before or after that trip that you took to New York to try to deal with our credit rating.
Yeah, we had to deal with that to try to explain what we were doing, how we were dealing with the, you know, a lot of it was also wrapped up in the recession and how we were balancing our budget. Mm-hmm. I kept telling them, explain to me, will you? Here Oregon has a balance, I'm talking out of to New York City and the Wall Street folks. Would you please explain to me? Oregon cannot have a deficit. I've called special sessions to rebalance the budget. We have a balance. We do not have a deficit. And yet you're talking about lowering our credit rating. Now, the federal government has a huge deficit. And they have AAA.
Right.
Well, please explain this to me.
What did they say?
I never got excited. I guess the difference was that they can print money and we can't.
Right, exactly. You asked new Interior Secretary Donald Hodel to let Oregon and other states have a seat at the table when and if a massive land exchange between the U.S. Forest Service and the BLM would take place. What did you think of Hodel? He's an Oregonian, isn't he?
Don Hodel did a very good job as Interior Secretary. And I say that in the sense that there's so much potential for controversy and criticism. And Don, I think, was very even-handed.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think he was more conservative. He wasn't conservative, but more on that side of the fence than liberal. But still, he managed that probably as well as with a minimum of abrasiveness. I think of his predecessors and successors did a good job.
Did you know him before he went to Washington?
Yeah.
What was the nature of this issue between the BLM and the Forest Service land exchange?
Well, the basic difference is the way the agencies operate. You'd think that in dealing with forest land that they would be doing pretty much the same, but they don't, and I can't tell you the details of it. And so it was a matter of if you move BLM land to Forest Service or Forests or the BLM. And that then made a difference of how those lands were going to be treated. And only because they didn't deal with forest lands the same, again, the status quo was going to be changed. And our point was, if the status quo is going to be changed, we'd like to be a party to that.
Were you suggesting certain changes yourself?
Not as I can recall. Mm-hmm. Not as I can.
Also, there was the issue of a draft federal program for offshore oil and gas leasing.
Yeah.
What was going on there?
Well, it's the same story. We talked about it once before. And the leasing really was for exploration.
Right.
Not drilling. And my practical view was, go explore, find out what I already know, at least what I presume I know, and that is, it's not worth drilling. And we just forever take care of that problem. As long as you don't allow to explore, then there's a continual threat of drilling.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to get rid of that, because everyone tells, we've only made one discovery, as you know, in Mr. Oregon, of natural gas. For whatever geological reason, we're not in Texas or Oklahoma. And let's go say, actually, some of the, although many wouldn't publicly state it, are saying that this is just not a productive area for gas or oil in Oregon. So, okay, let's do this officially. Go out and find out that this isn't good, and now it's public knowledge that it isn't any good, and we've taken care of the problem all again.
Mm-hmm.
There's those that have fought it. Oh my God, they're going to find something, and then we're going to start drilling.
Yeah.
I like to put some things to bed.
Well, talking about putting issues to bed, there was a dispute with California over a 216-mile meandering border with California.
That was really interesting. I'm laughing now because it was the Attorney General down in California had figured out that the line, the boundaries hadn't been correctly figured. There was some people in Oregon that should be in California, and some people in California should be in Oregon. And making a pretty big deal out of it. And then Governor Duke Majan, I think, was supporting his attorney general. He wasn't doing it with a great deal of enthusiasm, but he was saying that, you know, we ought to get together and talk about this thing. And then the Attorney General down there was kind of talking about suing. And so I wrote to the Governor Duke Majan, who I knew very well, and I said, George, I don't understand all of this. I said, the people that are now living in California that should be Oregon are perfectly happy. And the people in Oregon, it should be California, are perfectly happy. And I see absolutely no reason to get together and debate this subject. And if you want to sue us, go ahead and sue us. And that was the end of that.
did he reply to that?
No, I never heard anymore.
Well, where would it have changed the border?
I can't tell you exactly, but I'm saying this is crazy. Uh-huh. And it was. You know, if you take practical life, the people who are living in California are perfectly happy where they were.
Right.
Who cares about where a line runs? They have to be in California. So somebody made a mistake. What are you going to do about this? And the people that are in Oregon that could have been California, they're perfectly happy.
Well, wasn't part of the issue the 3-mile offshore border and the potential for oil and gas revenue there?
No, I don't think so.
No. And then there was this thing about California, that it must be determined by the U.S. Supreme Court or Congress, and Oregon wanted it to be resolved through the Interstate Compact.
You mean talk about
the border,
the offshore?
Yeah, the
offshore
border
really was a little bit different than this other thing.
Ah, uh-huh.
It had been an outgrowth of that, but that was a different question altogether.
Uh-huh.
The answer is yeah, that's truly the case. But again, I wasn't interested in fussing with it. There's just nothing out there. I don't know why I spend a lot of money for lawyers to find out what you're going to find out. So, to me, it's just a matter of practicality. Common sense, really.
Right.
Just pure common sense. And, you know, why fight about this border thing? I couldn't understand it. And I thought my letter said to George, want to sue me, sue me.
Would there be a net gain by one state or the other if it had been changed?
I couldn't even tell you. But it wasn't even worth the discussion to me. Everybody's happy where they are. Leave them alone.
Do they know why it wasn't correct? The border wasn't correct?
There was some surveyor somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't really know. Uh-huh. I never paid that much attention to
uh-huh.
it.
Uh-huh.
I just know that everybody was happy down there. And leave them alone.
Uh-huh.
That was in my first inaugural address. Where they say to be left alone, leave them alone.
All right. And how would you characterize your relationship with George Duke Major?
Sure. Very warm, very good. I think he did a fine job as governor of the state of California. I liked him as a person. I think he was well respected. I know he was well respected by his fellow governors, which is a good measurement stick. But I had a good relationship.
Another one of the issues that was coming up at this point was the loss of government revenue sharing funds to help the federal deficit.
Actually, Oregon had already, the state of Oregon had already gone through that.
Oh, they already had.
And now we're talking about cities and counties.
Ah.
Revenue sharing. And the monies that we got, the state, had gone into basic school support. And that had been cut off quite a long time prior to that. So the state itself had gone through it already. Now they were talking about eliminating revenue sharing in cities and counties. Source of income. The only thing left to it would be to raise property taxes.
Sure. Would probably other
say about it.
Milton Friedman. It was artists. When you have short-term managers